Good morning. So wonderful to see you and to be here. It's really a privilege and honor to be back in our Gross Kollel, especially to be in the presence of Rebbe Umori, Rebbe David Miller. It's just close for all of us to learn from him and to continue to grow from his Torah and his role model. My dear friends, Rabbi Asaf Bednar, Rabbi Chaim Eisenstein, just such a bracha to always be with you. And certainly in this context, it's great, great kollel. I see we have people here on our first kollel from, you know, many, many even generations of those learning together with great plans of contributing to the future of the Jewish people, both here in Israel and, of course, in Arzot HaBrit in Israel and across the world. What I wanted to begin with a little bit of a thought question for you, and then we'll dig deep into Hanukkah to understand it better, is really about the tzufa, about the period that we're in today. Who here believes that the founding of the State of Israel, the revitalization of the land, and the subsequent ingathering of Jews from all across the globe after close to 2,000 years in exile is a great miracle? Who here believes that it's a great miracle? Everybody's a great miracle. Who here believes that the founding of the State of Israel, the revitalization of the land, and the subsequent ingathering of Jews over the past number of decades after being in exile for close to 2,000 years is a sign of the potential geula, of reshit smichat geula tehu? Believe that? You all believe reshit smichat. Now, who here believes that the miracle of the founding of the State of Israel, that the symbol of reshit smichat geula tehu, can be lost? Who believes that the beginning of this new age can be reversed? That Israel, God forbid, can be lost from us? And that the Jews could be forced back into exile again. Meaning we see ourselves as part of a path of history. And the Jewish people are certainly moving forward in history. Like where we are today, Eino Domeh. Eino Domeh. It's 100 years, 200 years, 500 years, 1,000 years. We're moving forward in history. Can this process be reversed? And I raise this question, as scary as it is, because it directly relates to the fundamental nature of the holiday that we're celebrating this week, that of Hanukkah. And by better understanding Hanukkah, I would argue, we have a better understanding of our contemporary situation and our responsibilities in our current era. So let's start with Hanukkah. We have a number of sources. Let me see how many did I put on this page for you. Because I know we have a very sheer colleague to get to, so I will skim. We have a number of sources. Let's start with what do we celebrate on Hanukkah? Okay, famous Machlokas, or two, not just say Machlokas, but why do we celebrate Hanukkah? Two possibilities. My Hanukkah, the Gemara says, the Tanah Rabbanan b'chafei b'kislev yumen the Hanukkah tibne inon. They found one vial of oil as they beat the Yevanim, the Gemara says, and they could. Only enough to light one night, and it had a great miracle, and it lit 8 days. It's a great miracle of the oil. Of course, the contrast to the Gemara is the Al-Anisim, which already in the Sechet Tanot, we see the Sechet Sofrim, we see it being mentioned, and when in the Al-Anisim, as we know, there's no mention of Neis Pach HaShemen, the miracle of the oil. The focus of the Al-Anisim is on what? It's on the war, it's on the miracle of the war. And so you have the miracle of the war, and you have the miracle of the Shemen, and the question is, what exactly are we celebrating when we celebrate Hanukkah? And of course, many derivations of this question, why 8 nights, not 7 nights, etc. We all have heard this multiple times. So let me start by giving you an approach to this question that I think emerges very much from Chazal. That's the first part of the shiur. And the second part is an approach to the answer to this question that emerges from the Book of Maccabees, which is, in this case, it would be earlier than Chazal. And I'm going to work with you on the Book of Maccabees, what it is, and what it means at the Tkufa at that time, and what they thought Hanukkah meant at that time. So first we'll see how in the Machshevet Chazal, and afterwards see at the what the Book of Maccabees has to say about it, and I think it's an interesting contrast. When it comes to Chazal, there's something that is very obvious when you approach the holiday of Chanukah. What is the holiday of Chanukah most similar to? Which holiday is it most similar to?
Sukkot.
Who just said Sukkot? Right. Okay, so it's most parallel to Sukkot. Now, this emerges, you know, in somewhat a striking way, right at the very beginning, when the Gemara starts talking about Hanukkah and Shabbos. Look at source number 4. The Gemara talks about, of course, the Machogus Beshamai Beshillel, whether you're supposed to light upwards or you're supposed to light downwards. Right? Each night, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 8, or 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And the Gemara says, what is the reason for Beshillel and Beshamai? So if you look at the underlines, Chadomar Tamid de Beishamai Kineged Par Echad, Tamid de Beitzil, the Malam of Kodesh Ve'en Maritin. The reason for Beishamai is Beis Hill is Malam Bo Maritin. Okay, very nice. You go upward in Kedusha, you don't go downward in Kedusha. Makes a lot of sense. And when it comes to Beishamai, what's the reason? Because Kineged Par Echad. What does it mean, Kineged Par Echad? What does that even mean?
Have fewer and fewer parim in the korbanot.
So in Sukkot we have the parim of the korbanot of the musaf. If you look at source number 5, are in descending order. Right, the first day you bring 13, you just look by the underlines. On the first day you bring 13. Yom Hasheni you're bringing Shnei Masar, you're bringing 12. The third day 11, then 10, then 9. So it's in descending order. So Beishamai says similarly, like the parim of Chag are in descending order. So too, the lights of the candles are in descending order. What is one thing has to do with the other? That is true, the Pari Chag are in descending order. And, I don't know, pick something else that's in... And we wrap Ritzuos of Tefillin, you know, 1, 2, 3, 5... I mean, that's true. What's the connection between Pari Chag and Sukkot? Why would that be a driving force for Shammai to determine how he's keeping the holiday of Hanukkah? So clearly, that's already a tip-off. But if one thinks about the holiday of Hanukkah and what it's most compared to, Sukkot is certainly what comes to mind. If you look, for example, at source number 7, the Gemara says, the Amar of Yochanan Shurim Shem Ben Yotzendek, there are 18 days of full hallow. Shmoni yimei achag, meaning in only with the Yom Tov Rishon. Shmoni yimei achag, shmoni yimei Chanukah, the Yom Tov Rishon shel Pesach, the Yom Tov shel Atzeret. 8 days, 16 out of the 18 days where your gomer is hallow all year is Sukkot and it's Chanukah. 8 days of Sukkot and 8 days of Chanukah. Now, even the very fact that there are 8 days is already a tip-off. Right? Only Sukkot, Shmini Atzeret says 8 days. Chanukah, 8 days. And 8 days dafka, halal v'hodah, a full halal. Another great tip-off is, of course, is how essential the concept of Hidur is both to Sukkot and to Chanukah. So we know this, of course, pre-Eitz Adar, that Hidur, when it comes to Sukkot, you know, is part of the essential mitzvah of the day, certainly as you see in the Etrog. Okay, and similarly when it comes to Hanukkah, how do you know that Hidur is part of the essence of the mitzvah of the day of Hanukkah?
Opening of the Gemara. The Gemara begins.
The Gemara begins about Mahajim and Ram. The whole Gemara, when it speaks, it's not just Neri Shabbos, so it opens right away with Mahajim and Mahajim. And then you get to all these halachic questions about, let's say you're lighting, you know, to what extent does the Hidur mitzvah become part of the essential mitzvah of the Hanukkah candles? To what extent do you light one candle and are yotze, and then the others are extra? I mean, if you have madlik, you know, ner l'ner, or you know, if you only do one, do you go do a bracha for another? All the nafkaminas that emerge from that, and what comes is this unusual possibility, which is the hidur when it comes to Hanukkah is part of the essential mitzvah of lighting menorah. The best comparison of that, you know, halachic, that issue, is Esrog, is Pri Eitz Hadar, where Hidur is the essential part of the mitzvah. It's not just a tangential thing, it's essential part of the mitzvah. Perhaps another time we could go over that shir, I just say that as an afkamina. But clearly, when you put everything together, Hanukkah is very much modeled after Sukkot. Now, why is that the case? Why would Hanukkah be very much modeled after Sukkot? So I think it goes to the heart of what Hanukkah is, and really what Chazal did when they created the Darabanan holidays. Because what happens, if you look at the Torah, the holidays are in one season. It starts with Pesach and it ends with Sukkot. What is the season from Pesach and Sukkot in Israel? Israel doesn't have four seasons. Right? We only have two seasons. So from Pesach to Sukkot is the... Say again?
Dry season.
The dry season. It's the sun, it's the agricultural season when things are growing and planting. And then after Sukkot, from Sukkot to Pesach, is the rainy season, it's the dark season. And it's just starting, it's all the, you know, and there, interestingly, there are no Daraisa holidays. There are no Daraisa holidays. Daraisa holidays take place in the agricultural year, in the sunny time, in the winter. There are no Daraisa holidays. Now, what are the themes of the, take the bookends, of Pesach on the one hand, and Sukkot on the other? Again, I'm collapsing many different shurim into one, but you'll allow me to give this brief overview, and then we can unpack this multiple times in the future of Bezrat Hashem. So the theme of Pesach is redemption, is Gula, and the theme of Sukkot is Hashkacha. Right? Pesach is the time Hashem took us out of the Mitzrayim, when you start, when the spring starts, it's all about redemption. And Sukkot is the Hanani HaKavod following us in the Midbar. It's gathering in the food that your Hashem is still with you. But it's all there in a very clear way. It's overt. It's obvious. It's in the season. It's open. You're getting food. In the Midbar, you saw the Hanani HaKavod. Hashem's presence is much more clear. It's much more clear. In the winter, it's dark. It's hard to see redemption, and it's hard to see Hashem's presence in the same way. So what is it that we celebrate when we celebrate Hanukkah? So I personally am partial to the Maharal's explanation, the Maharal that I have for you on source number 8, that the point of Hanukkah, because you have two things, you have the Milchama, and you have the miracle of the oil, and they really merge into one central theme, right? Because you might have thought, after this great war, that who won this war? Tzahal won the war. It's a great army victory, great strategist. He used a little cyber, he used a little, you know, elephantine defense mechanisms, and, you know, Tzahal won the war. Okay, and by the way, this is a tkufa. Remember, you're in Bayit Sheni. This isn't Bayit Rishon. There are no overt miracles going on. You know, when they inaugurated Bayit Sheni, they were crying. Wasn't at all like Bayit Rishon. With Hashem's presence obvious and overt and always. So here you're in this dark tkufa, this period that it's not obvious that Hashem is here, that Saul, maybe Saul won that war. And then you have the miracle of the candle that highlights not just that, oh, look at this nice miracle, the oil has continued, but actually it highlights Hashem's presence. Why does a candle that doesn't burn highlight Hashem's presence? There's a great article in Torah to go this week. And a Hanukkah to go. Pretty sure it's in this week. That, look at the introduction, that talks about this. About a candle that doesn't burn its fuel is the snap. And where do we see fire that doesn't burn its fuel? It's the bush that burns without burning. That's a flame without burning. And that's in the Torah, a fire that doesn't burn its fuel is Hayav Ovaviyah. I mean, that's everlasting. Meaning fuel is limited by definition. What's everlasting is if you get a fire that doesn't burn, so that represents Hashem. You know, the pillar of fire, it always represents Hashem. So the concept of it's not just that they didn't have oil and therefore the miracle, but that Eish, a fire that doesn't burn its fuel, represents Hashem. So what it showed is that Hashem is there. But not just there at the time when they were lahadlik, when they lit the menorah. But Hashem was there the whole time. And of course, you need the koach of others. It's not, you needed the makabim, you needed people to fight. But who knows in lacha the koach asot the tachai? Meaning, it's Hashem's hashkacha. Like that's what's here. Now, and it wasn't obvious. And that's what Chazal did. Meaning, they took the bookends of the agricultural season. From the spring to the fall, and the miracle of the redemption of Hashkacha when it's obvious, and they pulled it into the winter. So Purim is really Pesach. And that'll be all of this year. And Chanukah is Sukkot. But it's Sukkot when it's not obvious. It's Sukkot in the winter, where it's not obvious. Right? That's what they were teaching us. You know, that even when it's dark, even it's hard to find Hashem, Hashem is there, the Hashkacha is there. He's the one that's giving us the fuel. You know, and that's why, what's the message of the menorah? We read in the Haftorah in Zechariah. What's the message? That when Hashem shows Zerubbabel, when he shows him, what is the message of the lights of the Hanukkah? What's the message? Lo b'chayim, lo b'koch, ye b'ruchi, amar Hashem tzvokot. Right? It's not by your might, it's not by, it's me. It's the message of the menorah. You know, and that's the message of Hanukkah, that's why the comparison to Sukkot, and when Chazal, I would suggest, when they were making, or being attacking, Chanukah as a holiday that we're going to keep, they had consciously in mind the holiday of Sukkot. You know, for this kind of reason. Because this is Sukkot. Even the Chovat Abayit stuff. Meaning from Dirat Arai to Dirat Kavah, the whole focus on the Bayit, the Bayit Daluk, all the Chakiras that relate to Chanukah, you know, are all very similar to the questions that we raise when it comes to Sukkot. Like, all these questions are there. Okay, everything I just said to you is Hanukkah, according in Chazal, and when we made this, when it was Nikba, you know, as Chag, that we're keeping. I want to share with you what I think is a different presentation that we find in the Book of Maccabees. Now, what is the Book of Maccabees? And the reason why it's interesting, it'll just give a broader historical perspective, I think, will give us a little better understanding of how it applies to our lives today. So, of course, the Book of Maccabees is not in Tanakh. Right? It was never, it's not canonized. They're found in the Septuagint in Greek. Of the books, only the first two are relevant for us to deal with the era of the Maccabees and the story of Hanukkah. These two books were written by different authors, and two Maccabees is multiple sections written by different authors. The first book was originally written in Hebrew. We only have its translation. And the second book is assumed to have been directly written in Greek. Scholars dispute the exact dating of the books and the authenticity of each section. For our purposes, let's say they were written around the middle of the Maccabean era, perhaps 50 to 100 years after the story of Hanukkah. Okay, so there's nothing holy about these books. There's nothing holy about these authors. They represent a person's opinion or perspective at that time, which I think itself is interesting. Of course, nothing halachic, as with, you know, when we learn Gemara, Shas, and Poskim. But so let's look at the story in 1 Maccabees. If you look at number 12, it tells the story up to the late 2nd century. So the background is that the first chapters tell the story of the terrible oppression under Antiochus. The revolt started by Mattathiah and then carried out by his sons, especially Yehuda Maccabee, who was the general of the army. So after experiencing some victories, they moved to Jerusalem. They found the temple defiled and in ruins. If you pick it up and turn the page in verse number 43. Okay, who wants to read? This is a group experience. Take it away.
And they cleansed the sanctuary and removed the defiled stones from unclean place. They deliberated what to do about the altar of burnt offering which had been profaned. They thought it best to tear it down, lest it bring reproach upon them. The Gentiles had defiled it, so they tore down the altar and stored the stones in a convenient place on the temple hill until there should come a prophet to tell what to do with them. Then they took unused stones as the law directs and built a new altar like the former one. They also rebuilt the sanctuary and the interior of the temple and consecrated the courts. They made new holy vessels and brought the lampstand, the altar of incense, and the table into the temple. Then they burned incense on the altar and lighted the lamps on the lampstand, and these gave light in the temple. They placed the bread on the table and hung up the curtains. Thus they finished all the work they had undertaken.
Okay, good. So, and they tore everything down. Everything was defiled. They stored it. And they started building. So let's keep on going.
Early in the morning on the 25th day of the 9th month, which is the month of Kislev, in the 148th year, they rose and offered sacrifice, as the law directs, on the new altar of burnt offering which they had built. At the very season and on the very day that the Gentiles had profaned it, it was dedicated with songs and harps and lutes and cymbals.
Okay, so on the very day, scholars say that actually Antiochus, on that day, it was his birthday, I think it was, like 3 years before, he forced them to profane it. So that day, on the 25th day of Kislev, they rose, offered sacrifices, and burnt the new offerings and dedicated the songs, harps, lutes, and cymbals. Got it?
All the people fell on their faces and worshipped and blessed heaven who had prospered them. So they celebrated the dedication of the altar for 8 days and offered burnt offerings with gladness. They offered a sacrifice of deliverance and grace. They decorated the front of the temple with golden crowns and small shields. They restored the gates and the chambers for the priests and furnished them with doors. There was very great gladness among the people, and the reproach of the Gentiles was removed. Then Judas and his brothers and all the assembly of Israel determined that every year at that season the days of dedication of the altar should be observed with gladness and joy for 8 days, beginning with the 25th day of the month of Kislev.
Okay. What do we see in the story? Let's start with the similarities. What is similar how the story of Hanukkah was recorded by this writer maybe 50 to 100 years after 164 about Hanukkah that is similar to what we see in Chazal?
The defilement
of the Beis HaMikdash.
Cleansing of it.
Cleansing of it.
Timing.
What's timing?
The guest.
20th the day of Kislev.
8 days also.
8 days, an 8 day holiday. Yep, that. Where's the setup?
They burn.
Since they lit up.
And they light the lamps on the lampstand. Is that not referring?
No, that is, it's good.
Obviously, it's not the stress.
But it's not the stress. What is the centerpiece? If you had to pick a. Say again?
Chanukah
Samigdash, and very specifically, if you had to pick the kli that was the centerpiece of this, it is.
Mizbeach.
Because the Chanukah HaMizbeach. That was the essential piece. And it wasn't just that they cleaned, they actually made new kelim. Okay? And the explanation of the 25th was because it was the day that it was profaned. Okay? And why 8 days, Dafna? Why does it say they celebrate 8 days?
Because it knew Chanukah's name.
So why 8 days? It doesn't say. Okay, I'm starting to think about why would they do 8 days. Okay, move to another version. In 2 Maccabees, if you look at source number 13, here, let's start. Again, they purified the sanctuary, made another altar of sacrifice. After 2 years, they burned incense. So this is the first time in 2 years they are back in the Mikdash. So if you look at number starting with verse 5, who wants to read? Okay, we'll stick the all in somewhere.
It happened.
That is like a certain character. I love that. Okay, yeah.
It happened that on the same day on which the sanctuary had been profaned by the foreigners, the purification of the sanctuary took place. That is on the 25th of the same month, which was Kislev. And they celebrated it for 8 days with rejoicing in the manner of the feast of booths, remembering how not long before, during the Feast of Booths, they had been wandering in the mountains and caves like wild animals. Therefore, bearing ivy-wreathed wands and beautiful branches, and also fronds of palm, they offered hymns of thanksgiving to him who had given success to the purifying of his own holy place. They decreed by public ordinance and vote that the whole nation of the Jews should observe these days every year.
Okay, so this is super fascinating, obviously. So what did they, Dafka, what's recorded in the Book of Maccabees, what did they tell them to keep?
8 days, like so?
Sukkot. I mean, literally. They said, they celebrated for 8 days with rejoicing in the manner of the Feast of Booths. Remembering how not long before, during the Feast of Booths, they've been wandering the mountains and caves like wild animals, but remember, it was 2 years. They also didn't keep Pesach either. Or whatever, I'm not saying they didn't keep Pesach, but they didn't keep it in the same way. With the Beit HaMikdash. But yet, the thing that they are deciding that they're going to do is the Festival of Booths. Therefore, bearing ivy reed wands and beautiful branches, I mean, they took lulavim with them. So, on Chafei Kislev, they were celebrating with lulav and esrog. I don't know, it doesn't say esrog actually, but this is lulav, at least with lulavim and probably hadasim and arot. And offering hymns of thanksgiving. Okay, fascinating. Then that's what they're recording as the way that the Maccabees celebrated after the miracle. Fascinating. Okay, if you go to the next letter. So the next letter in source number 14, it's an amazing letter, because it's a letter from Jews in Jerusalem to their Jewish brothers in Egypt. So it's the Jews in Israel writing to the Jews in Chutz La'aretz. Okay, and there's a letter about this holiday. Okay, so what is the letter? Who wants to read now? Just go by the underlines. Yeah, please. Your name is?
Pavel.
Where are you from, Pavel?
Tina.
Where are you going after Gross?
Same. In Israel.
In Israel. Wow, we're really on a track over here. Okay, Pavel, take it away.
From the underline or from...
Yeah, from the underline. Yeah.
We besought the Lord and we were heard, and we offered sacrifice and cereal offering, and we lighted the lamps, and we set out the loaves. And now, see that you keep the Feast of Booths in the month of Kislev, in the 188th year.
Okay. So by the way, the 188 and before, it's all from three, it's from the beginning of the Greek rule. I forgot exactly. Just add 188 to 124. But this is like 40 years after Chanukah story. It was 164. And the Jews in Israel are writing to the Jews in Egypt. What are they telling them to do? To keep
Sukkot.
Well, not keep Sukkot. Keep Sukkot in the month of Kislev. Meaning what they're telling them to do is to keep Sukkot, meaning they're telling them to celebrate Chanukah. So 40 years later, in this letter, clearly it seems, what's happening? What's going on 40 years after Chanukah? What would you say? How would you describe the Jewish world? What's happening?
They're institutionalizing Chanukah for the rest of the world.
A, they're institutionalizing Chanukah for the rest of the world. Great point. Your name is?
Barak.
Barak?
Yeah.
Where are you from, Barak?
Alabama.
Now we're getting interesting. All these teenage people. They have to make Aliyah be interesting. Okay, good. So that's great. Barak? Okay, get that. So they're institutionalizing Chanukah. Okay, what else do you see about this? About what's going on at this time?
They come to not keep Sukkot in Tishrei, just keep it the time to two Sukkot.
No, I don't think that. And they're telling them, why do they have to tell them to keep the Feast of Booths in Kislev? They're already keeping the Feast of Booths in Tishrei. Right. But what do you see from that very request?
It's the model. They need to base it on something, the model of the keep, so they use it.
Definitely base, it's a great point of reference, by the way. It's such an important lesson in running institutions, trying to create change. You need models of success. Like, you want to start something from scratch, new words, new language, very hard. You need something to hang it on. You know, it'll really help shape it and keep on. That's for short. Your name is?
Leon Aaron.
Leon?
Leon.
Leon. Where are you from, Leon?
San Diego.
San Diego. Fantastic. Okay, so Leon from San Diego, Barak from Alabama, but what else do you see? Yeah.
Were they unaware that it happened?
Yafet. Why are they writing? Yafet. Your name is again?
Yoni Abrams.
Yoni, where are you from, Yoni?
Silver Spring.
Silver Spring. Okay, so, yeah, it seems like the Jews in Chutz La'aretz weren't keeping it. Now, were they unaware? Were they aware of not keeping it? I can't answer that question. Again, I don't even know if it's true. It's a letter that's in the Book of Maccabees. I'm not saying this is historical fact. But at least from the author's opinion, who wrote this letter, they thought that the Jews in Chutz La'aretz did not accept Chanukah as a day to celebrate. So they were writing them to encourage them to do it. And then, in the next letter, it really gets amazing how they try to encourage them to do it. So this is a little longer. I need an eloquent reader here who wants to dare take the stage. Somebody who's not making Aliyah. Or no, we're all making Aliyah. Somebody's not planning it this long. Barak, yeah.
From 9?
Yeah, from 10, the bulls.
And just as Moshe had?
Yeah, those in Jerusalem and those in Judea.
Top of the page. Those in Jerusalem and those in Judea, and the sentence and Judas to Aristobulus, who is of the family of the anointed priests, teachers of Ptolemy the king, and to the Jews in Egypt, greeting and good health. Having been saved by God out of the grave dangers, we thank him greatly for taking our side against the king. He drove out those who fought against the holy city. Blessed in every way by our God, who has brought judgments upon those who have behaved impiously, since on the 25th day of Kislev, we shall celebrate the purification of the temple. We thought it necessary to notify you in order that you also may celebrate the Feast of Booths and the Feast of the Fire, given when Nehemiah, who built the temple and the altar, offered sacrifices.
Okay, so first of all, again, we have the same idea. It's people in Israel telling those outside of Israel to keep Chanukah. But now he adds another layer. It's Chanukah is not just the Feast of Booths, it's also the Feast of the Fire, given when Nehemiah, who built the temple and the altar, offered sacrifice. What is the Feast of the Fire? So keep on going.
For when our fathers were being led captive to Persia, the pious priest of that time took some of the fire of the altar and secretly hid it in the hollow of a dry cistern, where they took such precautions that the place was unknown to anyone. But after many years had passed, when it pleased God, Nehemiah, having been commissioned by the king of Persia, sent the descendants of the priests who had hidden the fire to get it. And when they reported to us that they had not found fire but thick liquid, he ordered them to dip it out and bring it. And when the materials for the sacrifices were presented, Nehemiah ordered the priests to sprinkle the liquid on the wood and what was laid upon it. When this was done, and some time had passed, and the sun, which had been clouded over, shone out, a great fire blazed up, so that all marveled. And while the sacrifices were being consumed, the priests offered prayer. The priests and everyone, Jonathan led, and the rest responded, as did Nehemiah. The prayer was to this effect: O Lord, Lord Hashem, creator of all things, who art inspiring.
You can actually skip to 26, so there's a prayer again.
Accept this sacrifice on behalf of all of thy people Israel, and preserve thy portion and make it holy. Gather together all the scattered people, set free those who are slaves among the Gentiles, look upon those who rejected and despised, and let the Gentiles know that thou art our God. Afflict those who oppress and are insolent with pride. Plant thy people in the holy place, as Moshe said.
Okay, awesome. Then 32, when this was done, a flame blazed up, and the light, okay. So we have a great story of the fire of Nehemiah. Anybody ever heard that story before? It's not in Nehemiah. Not in Nehemiah. If I remember correctly, my neighbor T. Roan wrote an article once about this tradition of the fire of Nehemiah. Okay, certainly they had a tradition that Nehemiah, the way that Nehemiah inaugurated the second Beit HaMikdash was with this fire. Now, of course, Nehemiah didn't inaugurate the second Beit HaMikdash. It was Ezra who inaugurated the second Beit HaMikdash, Nehemiah built the wall. So it's all fascinating. I can't tell you everything that they're thinking when they're saying this, but I can tell you that they're contextualizing Hanukkah with two things. One is the Feast of Booths, and the other is something about this fire of Nehemiah when he inaugurated the second Beit HaMikdash. Look at the next one in verse 9 in 2 Maccabees. It was also made clear that being possessed of wisdom, Solomon offered sacrifice to the dedication and completion of the temple. Just as Moses prayed to the Lord and fire came down from heaven and devoured the sacrifices, so also Solomon prayed and the fire came down and consumed the whole burnt offerings. Likewise, Solomon also kept the 8 days. Right? How many days did Moshe keep to inaugurate the Mishkan?
8 days.
Solomon also kept the 8 days. The same things that are reported in the records and memoirs of Nehemiah. That he founded a library and collected the books about the kings and prophets and writings of the day, letters of kings about votive offerings. In the same way, Judah Maccabee, also collected all the books that had been lost on account of the war on which had come down upon us, and they are in our possession. Since therefore we're about to celebrate the purification, we write to you, will you therefore please keep the days? This is again the Jews in Israel writing, pleading to the Jews in exile to please keep these days. It is God who has saved all his people and has returned the inheritance to all, the kingship and priesthood and consecration. We're back! We're back in Israel! Please keep these days, as he promised to us. For we have hope in God. Then he will soon have mercy upon us and gather us from everywhere under heaven into his holy place, for he has rescued us from great evils and he has purified the place. Now, what this letter does is it contextualizes everything that's happening in Hanukkah and saying, listen, you have Moses, you have Moshe who did the Mishkan, you have Shlomo HaMelech who did the first Beis HaMikdash, you have Nehemiah who did the second Beis HaMikdash, and now we have Yehuda HaMakabi. Now, let's step back for a second, and you can understand why Sukkot. What happened on Sukkot? What happened on Sukkot?
Aliyah Regu.
Aliyah Regu definitely happens on Sukkot.
Is that referring to Ruchos Shnios?
Yeah, inaugurated by Shem.
Well, they inaugurated by Rishon. Let's start with that. And that's where Sukkot is the time where you inaugurate. So by Rishon, if you look at Source 15, Shlomo Melech, B'erech Ha'etanim B'chag, Kodesh Hashvi, inaugurated by Rishon. It's the time where you inaugurate the Beit HaMikdash. Right? In Ezra, it talks about Ve'asu et Chag HaSukkot. By the second Beit HaMikdash. Okay, so you have the first Beit HaMikdash, you have the second Beit HaMikdash, they're all inaugurated on Sukkot. What else will happen on Sukkot?
The war of
the all nations will come and sacrifice to our country.
By Shlishi too. So, what's happened is that you have a story of Hanukkah. And the Jews, with Yehuda HaMakabi, didn't just win a war. They took back the Mikdash, which was defiled. They built a new Kalim. They removed all the Tamei Mizbeach. They built a new Mizbeach. They sanctified this holy place again. In the context of Nehemiah, Shlomo, and Moshe. What do you think they thought this was?
And that was the final ruler.
I think, my opinion, reading the story, they thought it was the final ruler. They thought it was the final Gula. Now, if you look back in the Nevi'im, there's reason to think that even. If you look at source number 19, for example, the image that comes, that Chagai, written in the beginning of the second base of Mikdash, Bishvi, Be'esher Be'echad Chodesh, what is the seventh month and the 21st day of the month? Sukkot. I said, Hayidvar Hashem b'yad Chagai Hanavi. Turn the page. Okay, this is the message given to Chagai Hanavi on the last day of Sukkot. Pasuk Yud. Be'esrim ba'arba l'tshi. B'shnat shtayim l'dar yavei sheidvar Hashem l'chag Hanavi le'imor. And then another one. It was all about the message you read. It was all about that Hashem is going to bring back the Am Yisrael, and it was about Gadol Yaakov Rabayetz Zahachar Min Arisho, that it will be even greater than before. And then the next Nebuah, Vesrim Abba Lashi, which is the 24th of the 9th month. What's the 24th of the 9th month?
The day before Hanukkah.
Hanukkah. Kislev, 24th, the day before Hanukkah. Simun Alav Avchem, and Yom Azeh Umala, and Yom Esrim Abba Lashi, and Yom Azeh Yisad Echal Hashem, Simun Alav Avchem, Hashem will bring us back. So on the 20th, Chagai is predicting, sitting at the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash, 24th, 9th month, Chanukah. And they knew Chagai. And they're celebrating Chanukah on the 25th of Kislev. They didn't think this was just cleaning the temple. They thought it was the Gula. It's a great story if you look at source number 22. Or even let's start with source 21. Meaning when Josephus writes about Hanukkah, he puts it in the context by the underlines, and the desolation of the temple came out in accordance with the prophecy of Daniel. Okay, he puts it in the He puts Hanukkah in the story and the prophecy of Daniel, which is all about the Jews beating the, in this case, the Macedonians, and returning back to the Beis Hamikdash. It's all part of, they're all seeing this as part of Daniel. I'm suggesting Chaga. They're seeing this as part. And really, the kicker, if you look at source number 22, is the story that's told about Judah Maccabee, that after the noble Judas exhorted the people to keep themselves free from sin, for they had seen with their own eyes what had happened because of the sin of those who had fallen, he also took up a collection, man by man, to the amount of 2,000 drachmas of silver and sent it to Jerusalem to provide for a sin offering. In doing this, he acted very well and honorably, taking account of the resurrection of Tchias HaMesim, which is predicted in Daniel, which is what will happen in the end of days, which is the resurrection. For if you were not expecting that those who had fallen would rise again, it would have been superfluous and foolish to pray for the dead. But if he was looking for the splendid reward that is laid up for those who fall asleep in godliness, it was a holy and pious thought. Therefore he made atonement for the dead that they may be delivered from this sin. What Yehuda did is he did kapara for the soldiers, for the Jews that were killed. And the reason that he did that, according to this author, is because he believed that the resurrection of the dead was coming. They believed it was the Gula. This isn't just the story of cleaning the Beis Hamikdash. It's a fascinating thing what happens with, if this is, I mean, it certainly explains one thing, which is the name. What is the name of this holiday? Chanukah. What does that have to do with the Nesbach HaShemen and or the Nes Milchama? What does it have to do with each other? So, I mean, it goes to the point where you need the Ran to say, oh, Chanu Chafei. I'm saying that's how far. It doesn't make any sense. But it does make sense if they thought it was the next Chanukat Havais. And that Yehuda HaMakabi was in line with the illustrious, you know, with the illustrious lineage of Moshe Rabbeinu and the Mishkan, Shlomo Melech and Bayit Rishon, Nehemiah and fire on Bayit Sheni, and now Yehuda HaMakabi, also fire, of course, when it comes to Chanukah. So, I mean, to sharpen this point, what I'm suggesting is that there's a whole other way to explain the holiday of Chanukah, at least as it appears in the book of Matthew. And the way that we generally think of Chanukah, the key symbol is the menorah. And the key lesson is learned from Zechariah, Lo b'chaya b'lo b'koach ki b'ruchi. This is the Haftarah that we read when we celebrate Chanukah. Like with Sukkot, it's the Hashgacha of Hashem. But to the authors of the book of the Maccabees, the key symbol is the Mizbeach, not the menorah. And if they were writing the Haftarah, I would suggest that they would say, we should be reading from Chagat, as they saw these 8 days as the beginning of a new era. And this is the connection to Sukkot. It's not just the Hashkacha, it's that Sukkot is the holiday that's connected to the inauguration of the Mizbeach, and to the time that heralds in the beginning of the Messianic era. That is the time. It is Sukkot. Now, to be clear, again, this is not a historical question. I have no way of knowing if the actual history is told over in the book of Maccabees is accurate or not. This is just the author's writing. I have no, it could be a myth, it could be a minority. I have no way of knowing. I'm not a scholar, but maybe other scholars, and I'm not an expert in the area. I'm not saying that. And I don't know how many Jews thought this. But it seems that at least the people who wrote this did think that did think this way, and they thought that this was not just an elevation, but a turning point in Jewish history. Now, some manifestations of this idea do resonate even in our human hugging today. For example, the idea that we say a mizmor, Shir Chanukat Abayit L'David, every day, obviously alludes to this theme. But it's certainly not the focus of the holiday. The overarching spirit of Chanukat Abayit with a sense of imminent redemption that animated at least some Jews, okay, is not, like the authors of the Book of Maccabees, never became central afterwards. Right? Already Josephus in 94 CE reports of the holiday, he doesn't even call it Hanukkah. He calls it the holiday of lights. And as I mentioned before, the Ran has to explain the name. So my question is, why is this the case? Okay, if it's true, and maybe if it wasn't just a myth, why has the narrative of the story of Hanukkah not been adopted by our tradition? You know, why didn't this become, if some people fought it, why didn't it become the explanation of Hanukkah? And why is this the first time, probably for most, you're all hearing this? And I think the answer would be, is that it didn't happen. It didn't happen like they expected it to happen. They thought it was the beginning of the Geula. But it didn't happen. So that, if there were competing explanations of what's going on with this day, that one wouldn't have continued because it didn't happen as they thought. But why didn't it? Obviously, we can never know this.
Why?
Hashem's. Wow. So there's a real interesting possibility here. In their pleading for the Jews in Chutz La'aretz to please keep Chanukah. Because it can only happen, perhaps, if people believe that it's happening. It can only happen if people recognize that it's happening. And it can only happen if you change your life towards working to bring it imminent to redemption. Then it can happen. The possibility might have been there. It wasn't necessarily historically wrong. It was just never realized. And in this context, you begin to see Hanukkah not just as a great celebration of Hashkacha, which it is, not just a great joy that Hashem was in our lives in the past, as He is in our lives today, which it is, but also as a cautionary tale. My friends, we too are in times of miracle. We too are living through a period like no other in Jewish history. We too are being beckoned. Kol Dodi Vilvei. We're being beckoned to respond to the historical, incredible opportunities that exist for the Jewish people today. A couple nights ago, I lit the Hanukkah candle by the Kotel, in the place that the leadership of Israel and the Jewish people worldwide come together to light. In the place that the Maccabees so many thousands of years ago stood and found the one vial of oil after their victory against the Yavanim. And the place where Shlomo HaMelech built his Mikdash and Abraham bound Yitzchak. This Makom, Makom Kadosh, not only reminded me of my roots, but also of my responsibility and our collective responsibility to the future. It's a very personal place. It's not just a place for our nation, but it's a place in each of our hearts. This was the place that my grandparents, who were trapped behind Nazi lines, never had a chance to see, but only dreamed of all of their lives. And this is the place where my son went after basic training to be inducted into his army unit at Tzah. A couple of nights ago, when I lit the candle, I met the Kane family who lost their son, Ellie, in a terrorist attack in the Old City. All of us who have read about Ellie have been inspired by his life and years of complete service and devotion to the Jewish people, to the Old City, and to the Makom HaMikdash. And the whole event and meeting them, and the emotion of meeting inspired me with a new understanding of the phrase Hamakom Yinachem Etchem. What does it mean, Hamakom Yinachem Etchem? So Makom, of course, is a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Baruch Hamakom, Baruch Hu Hashem should comfort them. Maybe homiletically, Hamakom means the places and homes of each of your lives should bring comfort. But at that moment I understood by Yifka Bamakom, what is Hamakom? The Makom is the Makom HaMikdash. It's a reference to this very sacred place. This is the place in which the entire Jewish people feel attached. It's the place of our heritage. It's our past, and it's our future. And standing at that place, lighting a candle, representing the bridge between Israel and the diaspora, as Yeshiva University represents the flagship Jewish university that is Zionist and pro-Israel, whose students and alumni live, work, and contribute across the globe, speaking to the nation of Israel on television at that moment, I felt the comfort of the place, the joy of the Makom, and the inspiration. For miracles do not just happen to us in the past on Hanukkah. They're happening to us today. Bayam imahem, but also Azman Hazem. We celebrate today not just our past victory, but the enormous opportunity the future represents for our people as we educate our students to be the lights in the window, to add brightness, joy, and love to sanctify Hashem's name in the world, yesterday, today, and forever. That's what we do at Yeshiva University. And that is the mission that we seek to inspire within you, to recognize the opportunities of the day, to not be the recipients of that letter, of the Book of Maccabees, to be the writers of the letter, to bear the clarion call to Jews around the world that we're living in the miraculous times with enormous potential. And if we can sanctify God's name, if we can bring our values out into the world by making aliyahs, beautiful way of those who are doing it, and those who are returning back to Chutz La'aretz, okay, to sanctify Hashem's name in the world, to bring our values into the world, we have an opportunity to move history forward, perhaps like never before, or to say differently, perhaps like one time before. A time that was missed. We have an opportunity not just to celebrate Hanukkah, but to live Hanukkah. And this is so much Bi'adeinu. It's so much Bi'adeinu. You know, I talk about our core Torah values. And our core Torah values are the beginning, the base is emes, is truth. It starts at Har Sinai. It is the Torah. Everything comes from the Torah. Everything comes from when Hashem gave us the Torah. That is the beginning of our story. That is the basis. We study it, we learn it, we live it. We bring it to life into our time. We bring it out with chesed and joy into our chesed. We develop ourselves into our oven. That is the beginning of our story. Emes is the beginning, is the basis for everything that we do. The end of our story is Sion, is redemption. Redemption for the Jewish people, redemption for the whole world. And our job, our tafkid, is to place yourself in that story. It is the greatest journey in history. It's the journey of the Jewish people. And you are the leaders of tomorrow. Yeshiva University students are uniquely educated and equipped to have an impact on our society today, I would argue, like no other group of Jews in the history of the world. We graduate into all levels of power and influence, especially the world's communication today, and your skill set of being able to communicate and just being menschlich, good people. Everyone knows and loves Yeshiva University students, especially its rabbis. I want to tell you something. Over Sukkot, talking about Sukkot, I met with the president of the state of Israel, and he said to me, we need Yeshiva University rabbis. That's what he said to me. We need Yeshiva University rabbis in Israel, and we need Yeshiva University rabbis in the diaspora. We need people who are bringing the Torah's values into the world to sanctify God's name. We need Yeshiva University rabbis. And you are the people. And this is the moment. You know, and it's so essential for us to think of ourselves in the context of history. To find your Torah, Adam, to find who you are in a way that you're going to help push the Jewish story forward. You know, sometimes I feel that we don't focus on this enough. You know, we talk about, the essentials and the emes, which are necessary. You know, the Lima Torah, the Shmir Samitzvos, the connection with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, essential, necessary. 100%. We need, that's what, where does Hashem want us to go? Where does Hashem want us to bring Klal Yisrael? What about our responsibilities to other people? Right? That's what you've been given, this education, to take all of that and to move everything forward. Everything. And now's the chance. Now's the chance to do so. Hanukkah is such a great holiday for us, because it's perhaps the closest thing to our era. We can very well identify with the feelings. And we need to capitalize on the opportunities. You know, we must learn from the story and see Israel not just as a miracle that we recognize and appreciate, but as an opportunity and a responsibility. We are responsible to work on its behalf and to make Israel not just a central part of our lives, but to make sure that we help push the Jewish story forward for everyone. And I am confident in knowing our Yeshiva University, Musmachim, okay, that you will do so. Wherever you are, in whatever field you're in, even. Okay? A lot of the Musmachim Yeshiva University, they make aliyah, some go to, say, Chutz La'aretz, some go into the rabbinate, some go into chinuch, some go into the workplace. But wherever you are, you can be a light in the candle. And you can be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim by spreading your Jewish values and living your life with menschlichkeit and goodness and dignity and integrity. Okay? You spread, you're the shlichim, you're mamash the shlichim that spreads Hashem's message. You're all been gifted to be born in this time. And I'm confident that you will make the most of it. And indeed, this is a happy comic of Hanukkah's math. Because not just where we are today, it is what we believe we can be in the future. So thank you so much. Have a happy Hanukkah. It's so wonderful to be with you. I look forward to celebrating many, many more holidays of Hanukkah with you here in your Yerushalayim, here on Kodesh, together with our entire yeshiva and the Jewish people. Hanukkah Sameach.
Thank you.
Okay, so I ended enough before the Sheriff Foley, so you have a break. Any questions before we wrap up? Yeah, we're up.
with, are we suggesting that Big Shamane almost wants to bring us back to this original tradition?
Wow. I didn't think that. Maybe. That's an interesting idea. You're saying the machlokas Big Shamane Big Hillel is the machlokas about...
going forward. What's the nature of Hanukkah for?
I didn't think that. That's great. That's an interesting idea. Yeah, I think Sukkot is connected, regardless, being Mashkata. I think the concept of Sukkot is connected to, certainly in the Book of Maccabees is clear, they always were thinking about Sukkot. They always were thinking about Sukkot. There could have been, again, there could have been a myriad of people who were the Book of Maccabees. There could have been everybody else, you know, maybe 10% thought that, 90% thought Hashkata. Like, I don't know, like, what, you know, where that emerged. But there are many reasons to think about Sukkot. So I didn't think of it as Machlokes Beis Shammai Beis Hillel. The Sukkot applies to Hanukkah on many levels. The one thing I'm pretty sure about is the parallels between Hanukkah and Sukkot are not coincidental. So I assume that when Chazal were being metaken in Hanukkah, I mean, the reason why we do Hanukkah is because of Chazal. Not because of Book Maccabees. So I assume when Chazal was with Taka and Hanukkah, they had in mind Sukkot. And that was conscious, I assume. But what those, you know, what's the Hashkafic connections? I gave you some possibilities, but I'm sure you can think about this also. Maybe. Yeah.
What is the monument name again? Zaki Dayan. Whichever authors, or were they unaware of the miracle of the Pach Shemen? Did they not believe that it happened? But they just didn't think it was like an essential part of the institution about it?
Meaning, I just read, that's a text that I have. It was clearly a Masorah of a Nes Pach Shemen. Whether these, I don't know who these authors are. They could have been, you know, total extremists, not. I don't know. But it was clearly the Sora of the Neis Pach HaShemen from the time of HaShemen. I mean, Chazal lived very close. You know, all this stuff, it was very close to the time period of Hanukkah. So, yeah, I'm not really a scholar to tell you the Book of Maccabees and their that whole Tkufa, and what everyone was thinking of Tkufa, it would be hard to know anyway. But, I mean, there's clearly a Masorah of that Nes. Whether they, you know, knew it or focused on it or not, you know, I can't say. Yeah.
It's interesting, like, in regards to the Chanukah Mikdash by Shlomo Melch, that actually was only 7 days, not 8 days. Meaning, it's interesting that...
7 and 7.
What? Meaning seven and then seven for Sukkot, and, like, four, it was a combination of 14 days.
Right.
So, like... It's more something that
great point.
Wasn't going to get back on the original.
It's a great point. Yeah, how narratives, as I said, you try to place something in a framework. I mean, they also had the Nehemiah fire narrative. I don't know what that's even a greater. At least Sukkot, you have the basis of the, it's a time of Chanukah HaMikdash. Both by Rishon and by Shlishi. You're saying the actual, it's a great point. Yeah?
Maybe just as a response, maybe people feel like they were kind of referred to as the 7 days of Sukkot, and then when they talk about how they stayed with the community, it's there also. Especially like,
right,
you know,
I mean,
maybe that's where the 8 days
of Sukkot. Look, the book, whoever, the author, the Book of Haggis isn't holy. I don't need to. Other scholars that very would. But there's nothing kadosh about, you know, trying to figure out what they were. But, I mean, they clearly are seeing the parallels in that time. For me, what's interesting is just that there were Jews at that time that thought about this in this way. And it didn't take. You know, and that, it could be it didn't take because it's wrong. I would like to think, really for our purposes, as a lesson, that it didn't take because people didn't take it. And maybe it was potential blessing. And by the way, there might have been others along history, but that's like so barur. Especially when they felt when Yehuda Maccabee was mamish doing, he was giving kapara for Tchias HaMeisim in the book of Matthew. I'm not saying he did it. He's saying the author who wrote 100 years later, who was writing about Yehuda Maccabee, said that he did this for Tchias HaMeisim. That's, you know, powerful. You know, they're referring to the Neil, referring to prophecies. And again, you have Chagai. It's not, it didn't come out of nowhere. Like, this is a tkufa. So it makes sense to think of it. Yeah. Other thoughts?
Yeah. That's in terms of the beautiful message about bringing the world forward.
Yeah.
If there's a certain universalistic aspect of Sukkot, at the Par Yochai, the 70, maybe the 70 nations, and I mean, that could also possibly be maybe the connection that Beit Shammai is making.
Yeah.
I mean, aside from the individual holiness of each day, that I mean, there could be, if Hanukkah is about us taking advantage of the opportunity to bring Geula,
yes,
and that's for the whole world, the Zoshan.
Yeah.
I
think you're right. That's a great Sukkot. Look, in terms of the message, to me, that's really the essential. What's really essential is why it's probably one of the central reasons why I chose to uproot my life and do this job. Mayor, we're off camera, right? Mayor?
Yeah.
Can you stop recording?
No.
Stop recording.
Okay.
Is part of the is that, you know what, actually I'm wrong. Mayor, let's record this. I'm wrong.
Okay.
Wrong. No. Is
where does that happen?
Does Rabbi
have
to
back
in Israel? Well, that will not happen. I mean, Hashem. But I'm saying the idea that in our modern Orthodox world, we're thinking too much about replacement. Like the motion that we think about when you raise your kids is how are we going to replace ourselves? You know, and maybe replace ourselves even a little better. You know, learn a little more. You know, keep Shabbos a little better. You know, and it's like this rotational movement of a continuous replacement, as opposed to a forward motion. That we're not just replacing ourselves, we're moving forward in history. And I long felt, you know, one of the benefits after I made Aliyah and lived in the Dati Lumi community, there's a lot of strengths and weaknesses of every community. One of their strengths is that they felt and they feel like they're part of a mission. And there's a passion. And you're part of a mission. So I remember when I first came to YU, as just being interviewed and just trying to figure out if I wanted to do this or not, I saw an ad. I was looking through their ads. And I spoke to the trustees about this. I saw an ad that said, Yeshiva University, sacrifice nothing, achieve everything. And that's really amazing. I said, I come from a community, the Dati Lumi community in Israel. It's willing to sacrifice everything. My son is in Gabati. You know, his friends are, like, they're willing to sacrifice everything. And you're willing to sacrifice nothing? Is there nothing? And what I think it highlighted for me is this lack of passion of a mission. We're on a mission here. Hashem has given us a purpose. There's a reason you were born in this world at this time with your kochot. We at YU can help you develop your kochot. That's the Torah Adam, to develop your kochot. But it's not for you. It's not for self-actualization. Right? It's for chesed. It's to help others. But it's also for history. You're born here at this time. Now, how do we get our community to be thinking not just about this moment and making sure that their next generation, I mean, that's essential. But forward, that we're moving forward in history. I'm telling you, you guys are uniquely capable. Uniquely capable. You know, when you think about a shliach, so you normally think about, what do you think about for a shliach?
That's right.
Nice. Okay. Done. I've done my thing. All right. Many others would have said Chabad. Okay, and they're amazing, their shlichut. And that sense of shlichut we need.
their shlichut is rabbis around the world, which is amazing. Amazing. At Yeshiva University, we have thousands of students. We have our rabbis who are ba'adai shlichim. I have to be out. And we also have ba'alabatim who are shlichim. And they have a job also to be out when they're out in the world. You know, somebody said to me, somebody came over to me before COVID, when I used to, when we were traveling more, he said, you know, my son just landed this great job in this top business firm. Like, really sought after the trip. He said, you know, but he's struggling now because at YU, he was learning all day, he was davening, like, you know, mid-hook for an hour. And then, like, he was, and here, he, like, tries to, he gets a minyan in, he does not feel me quickly. Like, where is his avodas Hashem? So I said to him, you know, his avodas Hashem is, of course, in his davening and his learning, of course. But his avodas Hashem is in his hours that he's working. That's his avodas Hashem. A, because we believe in human thriving and flourishing society, but not just that. The way that he works, the role model, with the dignity and menschlichkeit, every time he walks into the office, with the kippah on his head, he is an opportunity to help move the Jewish story forward. And he should be thinking of himself in this context. He has a greater purpose. Right? And that makes everything that you're doing kadosh. It's not just, oh, I do this and I make some money so I can give tzedakah. That's also good. That's also very important. We're not underestimating that. But in addition to that, it's every moment is an opportunity to help bring the Gula. And why are you students uniquely, I think, mamash, uniquely capable, because they're in every place, LinkedIn, Amazon, tech, business, law, medicine, occupational therapy, PA, every place. We're in every place that are influential today. Government, every place. You just have to think of yourself in that context, and your whole life changes. Like, mom, it's your own. That's what's so sad about this. This is the way that people can live purposeful, meaningful lives. Every moment of their life will change. And they see every moment of their life as another opportunity to bring Gula. And that's our message. When we talk about Torah Tzion, everything starts with this. Everything is Torah Tzion. It's the beginning. It's the essence of everything. But let's not forget our why we're here. Just to bring the world to Tzion. You know, on Sukkot. You know, the Jewish people and the rest of the world. And to put your Torah Tadam, who you are, into that. To bring it along. That's what we're here. Okay? I think I've taken more than enough of your time. But it really is a blessing, what a bracha to be here with you. This is like such a highlight for me, and it's really why I said why I took this position in the first place, in order to speak to you about this. And I open the conversation to you if you have any questions afterwards privately. You can email me, and happy to stay in contact. And I'll be back, of course. Let's wrap the show. We'll continue learning. Okay, Shkaya, Hanukkah Sameach. Thank you.